In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, July 19th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, focusing our entire two-hour program on the subject, keeping the best of the best, retaining a talented federal workforce. It's an in-depth conversation, and I will introduce you to my expert panel in a moment. But the reason we're tackling this topic today is we spend on this radio station, and people spend all across the federal media and the federal government, lots and lots of time talking about attracting the next generation of federal workers, how we bring in new people, what tools do we offer them, what incentives do we offer them to want to come to work for the federal government. There's an old saying in sales that it's easier to keep an old customer than it is to make a new one, and a number of human resources professionals have said the same thing applies when it comes to the HR profession. We're going to explore that subject today. In a moment, I'll introduce you to Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, former Chief Human Capital Officer of the Intelligence Community. About a half hour from now, Linda Springer, the former Director of the Office of Personnel Management, will be my guest. She'll be in studio for about an hour or so. And at 2:30 this afternoon, Angela Bailey of the Office of Personnel Management, Deputy Associate Director there, will join us by phone to talk about what OPM is doing moving forward and into the future to try to help you and your colleagues keep the good people that they have. As I mentioned, I have in studio to start off this conversation Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Intelligence Community. Ron, it's great to see you again now that you're on the other side of the fence. You're out of government service. Last time you were here, I think, was December, and you were still in, so to speak. So it's nice to see you, and I'm glad they're treating you well at Booz Allen.
Francis, it's great to be here in my I can't say I'm in my, here in my retired capacity because I retired for about a week.
Uh-huh.
And my wife threw me out of the house the middle of that week. So I'm back to work full time, just wearing the hat of Booz Allen Hamilton.
Talk a little bit about what you're doing for them before we move forward.
Well, I'm primarily focusing on human capital issues in the Defense Department, mm-hmm. which is my old stomping ground. I spent almost a quarter of a century there. It makes me feel old describing it that way. But
you started when you were like 8 years old, so.
That'll be my story, and I'll stick to it.
So that would be fine.
In part because I have post-employment restrictions back to the intelligence community, but it's great to get back to DOD. And I'll tell you, they have significant human capital challenges facing them. And, you know, one of the things I loved about working in the Defense Department and love about working with them now is they have this this can-do attitude that they may be big challenges, but they'll solve them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're happy to help.
All right. The premise of this conversation, as I said at the beginning, is that it's easier to keep the good people the federal government has already, especially in jobs like you dealt with at ODNI and that you're dealing with now in your capacity at the Defense Department, than it is to try to go and fill those jobs when somebody gets something that's attractive and makes them want to leave. You agree with that premise, first of all?
I do. But I really think the retention strategy begins almost before a new recruit walks in the door.
Mm-hmm.
So apropos of John Berry's, I think, historic effort to reform the federal hiring process, frankly, unless you give new recruits a realistic job preview, unless you take great care in their onboarding to introduce them to the agency so they don't run screaming from the room,
mm-hmm.
Unless you nurture them for those first, second, third, fourth year, then, you know, frankly, the long-term retention is just a non-starter.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk to agencies about retention strategies, I sometimes get funny looks, but then the light bulbs go off. It's way upstream.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about that if we have time.
Well, how are we doing at that? Do you think the agencies, I'm going to ask you to step down from the CHCO level and go to kind of the more micro level. Do you think the agencies are making that clear to their managers who aren't necessarily HR pros and don't necessarily have an extensive background in the field of onboarding?
Many of them are, probably not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Booz Allen co-sponsored a study with the Partnership for Public Service on onboarding. And again, we found best practices sort of uneven across the federal government. A lot of this does fall on the shoulders of the first-line manager.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if there were a secret ingredient to an agency's retention strategy, that's probably it. I think there are lots of studies that show that an individual's decision to stay or leave often turns, most likely turns on his or her relationship with their manager.
Mm-hmm.
And that also applies to the onboarding process because, frankly, it's that manager who that new recruit sees every day. It's the relationship that the two establish. It's the learning environment that that manager creates, not just for the new recruit, but for the full performance professional as well.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk a lot about sort of strategic retention strategies,
yeah,
tools and policies, et cetera, but it still gets down to that relationship between the frontline manager and his or her folks.
Yeah, and that's actually where I want to get into more because that seems to be what I hear people telling me they're having challenges with. It's the old saying, you leave a boss, not a job.
Right.
And that seems to apply here. What are the people who are successful at keeping their best people doing to do that?
Well, I think it's a combination of two things, and they have to work in concert. First, there's a set of sort of agency level or command level policies and practices that establish the practice and the notion of onboarding and provide the tools and the infrastructure to make it work. But the other key to me is investing in management and leadership development. Again, I think that's the secret ingredient. The federal government generally has underinvested in the development of its supervisors, its managers, and its executives. This is intangible. It's teaching those leaders soft skills. I can tell you, as I've reintroduced myself to the Defense Department, I've been gratified at the emphasis that DOD has been putting on preparing young professionals, full performance professionals, to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And that does require a significant investment.
Yeah. That's something, though, that I would imagine is happening primarily, of course not exclusively, but primarily because Secretary Gates came right out and said the next generation of pros at this agency are going to have to be experts in the soft skills, and he used that very term.
Right. Yeah. I think so. And but that's not to say other agencies aren't doing it. I'll speak to those that I'm familiar with. Only, and
sure.
I don't mean to exclude others, but for example, we know that VA is investing very, very significantly in leadership and management development.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope we can sustain those investments because they don't make the needle move right away.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in a bit of an anomalous period. You saw the results of the Employee Viewpoint Survey.
Yes.
And they're generally pretty positive results.
Mm-hmm.
But some of that, I think, is in part because of the context of this year's survey. People are happy to have a federal job, and they obviously want to keep it. But I do think we should take advantage of the fact that the federal government is an employer of choice at the moment, and everything is relative here,
mm-hmm.
and begin thinking about 2 or 3 or 4 years from now where the labor market is going to tighten. The demographics tell you it's going to tighten. And we're going to have to become, I keep saying we, the federal government is going to have to become more competitive where today we have an abundance of candidates. So we got to take the time now, take advantage of our position now to begin planning ahead when things do tighten and we do have to become more competitive. And again, I'll go back to the lead time necessary to prepare professionals to lead,
mm-hmm.
and to prepare managers to become executives and all the way up the chain of command. Now's the time we ought to be doing that, but it's difficult because those are significant investments without any tangible return.
Mm-hmm. We talked about the return on investment in when it comes to leadership training on our Industry Chatter segment last week, and I encourage you to go to federalnewsradio.com and search on the words Industry Chatter to find that conversation. Talked about that with Nick Schacht, who's the head of Learning Tree International. They do a lot of training for federal agencies, and that conversation available anytime you want to listen to it on our website. It's okay if you keep saying we in reference to the federal government. It reminds me of that mafia movie. Every time I try to get out, they keep pulling me back in. That must be what it feels like.
I think I've got it genetically encoded.
Well, that's okay. We forgive you for that. One of the things that you mentioned when it comes to the return on investment on training, it is hard to quantify. Are there arguments that managers can make when they go to their bosses, especially as we're starting to think already about 2011 budgets, or excuse me, 2012 budgets?
Well, there are certainly arguments that individual managers can make. I have to pause here and give credit to folks like John Berry and people on the Hill like Senators Voinovich and Akaka, who have put an emphasis on supervisory and managerial training. There's actually legislation, I believe, still pending that would require that. I mean, after all, you're not going to ask somebody to conduct surgery unless they're fully trained as a surgeon. Yet, in many cases, we entrust professionals to become new supervisors and managers without preparing them for that challenge. So I'm encouraged by the attention being focused on this. I'll have to point out, too, the Defense Business Board has just made recommendations to DOD to invest very, very heavily in leadership and management development to prepare the next generation to assume leadership roles.
I want to go a little bit off track when we come back and talk about something that you just mentioned a moment ago. My guest is Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, former Chief Human Capital Officer, among other places at the intelligence community. And we'll continue our conversation on keeping the best of the best, retaining a talented federal workforce, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues.
If you're in sales or own your own business, and you have more customers than you can handle, then you'll want to cover your ears. Because I'm about to tell you how to find even more customers. Customers who are just like your best customers. It's Sales Genie, America's leading provider of sales leads, plus money-making email and direct mail solutions. With Sales Genie, you can actually clone your best customers to find more of the customers you want. And right now, you can try Sales Genie for free just by calling 1-800-500-9903. No matter what you're selling or who you're selling to, Sales Genie provides the comprehensive information you need to create successful email, telemarketing, and direct mail campaigns. In fact, the only way Sales Genie won't work is if you don't use it. So if you're ready to find more customers who are just like your best customers, call now to try Sales Genie for free. To get your free trial, call Sales Genie now. 1-800-500-9903. That's 1-800-500-9903. 1-800-500-9903.
How is the U.S. Navy evolving its information capabilities? What is the Naval Information Dominance Strategy? How is the U.S. Navy introducing bold, game-changing strategies and concepts for the next generation? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored with Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Dominance and Director of Naval Intelligence. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
Save money at halfpricedc.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more.
This week, halfpricedc.com has half-price gift certificates to Empire Auto Detailers. Your car deserves to be treated to something special. Get your gift certificate today and get your car detailed on-site the Empire way.
Pie Panza, an Italian family-style restaurant in Falls Church, named Best Pizza in D.C. by Nickelodeon's Parents Picks. And California Tortilla, let them cater your next event.
See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Monday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. Can covert social networks help the government thwart criminals and terrorists? We're going to talk to a Cornell professor who's won a three-year government grant to study that question. We'll talk to a Gov 2.0 expert who tells us about the Gov 2.0 villains out there. And, of course, get an update on your thrift savings plan. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our in-depth conversation called Keeping the Best of the Best, Retaining a Talented Federal Workforce. And my guest for this part of the show is Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, former Chief Human Capital Officer at the intelligence community. You were also at the IRS and
DOD.
DOD, so an extensive background in HR and the federal government.
And I worked for our next guest for a while.
You did?
Mm-hmm, Ms. Springer.
Ms. Springer will join us shortly on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, former OPM director, talk about her view and her experience in keeping the best people inside the federal government. We talked a little bit about managerial development training and leadership training. They are different. Being a good manager of people and being a good leader are two totally separate concepts. Do you think they get lumped together too often and people mistake one for the other?
Oh, I think that's probably true. But frankly, the boundaries are a bit fuzzy. I can make an intellectual distinction between leadership and management. But in the context of this conversation, the fact of the matter is we need more of both.
Mm-hmm.
And agencies need to invest more in both. There are some managerial skills that anybody who is going to supervise people needs to have. There are leadership skills that, in my humble opinion, go beyond that. I think we've been calling upon professionals, particularly our newer professionals, to lead sort of up. And in many cases, horizontally,
mm-hmm.
they're not in formal leadership positions, but I can think of experiences both in the intelligence community, at IRS, at OPM, DOD, where professionals, you know, step forward and lead in their profession, even though they may not be formally designated as such. I love to see it, and I think we ought to nurture it. And again, the more formal we can get in preparing people for those kinds of roles, the better.
Mm-hmm. I promised to kind of go off track a little bit, and I want to do that. I want to go back to the survey that you and I talked about that OPM just put out. It's been within the last week and a half or so, I believe. And that is, I was impressed of all the data that was in that survey, and it was there's a lot, and it's really good stuff. But I think the data piece that fascinated me the most is the fact that they asked 500,000 federal employees to participate, and about half of them actually did. Now, you and I were talking off the air, and I said, people's political fortunes rise and fall over polls in the media, that when you read into them, only 1,000 people were surveyed. So the fact that 250 times the typical poll, that number of people chose to take their time and participate in something voluntary, I think says to me a tremendous amount about how valuable people in the federal government think these kinds of things are, how important this information for managers to have, how important they believe it is. And I just was really impressed by both the volume and the percentage of the people who chose to participate.
Well, and I'll actually connect some of the dots here. So if we're talking about retaining the best and brightest,
mm-hmm.
Again, I'll go back to some of the intangibles. One of them is engagement. If your workforce is engaged, committed to the agency's mission, feels that they are able to have some input and say in the direction of the agency and its policies, then you're going to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just the response rate alone of the employee viewpoint survey, and it's historically been very high,
mm-hmm.
says that at least as far as the federal workforce is concerned, it's very engaged. But we ought not to rest on our laurels. So one of the things I've learned in doing surveys for a long time in my federal career and now post-federal is that employees want to give you input, but if they perceive that you're not listening, that you're just doing the survey for its own sake and not taking some tangible, concrete action as a result,
mm-hmm.
then they'll begin to click off, and that will begin to affect retention.
Let's talk more about those intangibles, because you've mentioned those in various forms with various names a number of times since we got started, and let's bring in your former boss. When In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Dr. Ron Sanders with me on In Depth with Francis Rose. Former OPM Director Linda Springer joins us in a moment when we continue.
I'm I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher. The Dow's up 25 points. The Nasdaq higher by 3. Oil prices are slightly higher to above $76 a barrel. Home builders are feeling less confident about their industry, the most pessimistic since March of 2009. The National Association of Home Builders says its monthly reading of builder sentiment sank to 14. Readings below 50 indicate negative sentiment about the market. Delta Airlines flying high with its largest quarterly profit in a decade. The carrier says strong passenger revenue helped it to a second quarter net income of $467 million. That reverses a year ago loss of $257 million. And Motorola announcing it's selling most of its wireless network division to Nokia Siemens Networks at a price tag of $1.2 billion. Chris Maurer, CNBC, Business Radio.
Experience exhilaration. Honda Performance lives in our race cars and in the Accord and Civic Coupes. Try one out for yourself right now during Honda Performance Days and go to shophonda.com to sign up for your chance to take a pace lap and be on course to start an IndyCar race in the Izod IndyCar two-seater, driven by Mario Andretti.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal residents of the U.S. 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Sweepstakes ends September 5th, 2010 at midnight Eastern Time. Subject to official rules available at shophonda.com. Odds of winning depend on the number of eligible entries received.
Imagine you're on the phone with a client trying to explain a spreadsheet, but they can't see what you're talking about. Well, now they can. Use GoToMeeting for sales presentations or collaborations, so they see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's the easiest way to hold an online meeting. Right now, you can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. That's an additional 15 days if you use the promo code MEETING. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and type in MEETING.
Oh, would you look at this bill?
Tired of paying way too much to your alarm company and not getting real security service? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month, and there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has more than 40 years of industry-leading experience and was recently named Dealer of the Year out of over 30,000 companies. Ackerman has its own UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Put simply, with Ackerman Security Systems, you get the most qualified professionals in the industry monitoring your home for just $18.95 a month. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. So whether you want a new system or want to switch to reliable monitoring for just $18.95 a month, call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com. Federal employees call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Scientists led by the National Institutes of Health have discovered antibodies that will prevent most HIV strains from infecting human cells. Two potent human antibodies have been found to stop more than 90% of known global HIV strains from infecting human cells in the lab. Scientists have even demonstrated how one of the disease-fighting proteins is able to do it. They found the antibodies using a novel molecular device that homes in on the specific cells that make antibodies that fight HIV. According to the scientists, the antibodies could be used to design improved HIV vaccines or could be further developed to prevent or treat HIV infection. Moreover, the method used to find the antibodies could be used to find therapeutic antibodies for other infectious diseases.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
A judge in Denver has ruled a federal law making it illegal to lie about being a war hero is unconstitutional, saying it violates free speech. The ruling made last week came in the case of Rick Glenn Strandloff, a Colorado man who claimed he was an ex-Marine wounded in Iraq and received a Purple Heart and Silver Star. The military had no record of him ever serving. He was charged with violating the Stolen Valor Act. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine buying a television or vehicle today that you'll still be using in 40 years?
Probably not. When the military purchase an airplane, they know it has to last at least that long or longer, and the parts for the airplane may already be obsolete. That's where Airink comes in. Airink helps the DoD plan ahead for parts obsolescence. This planning saves money and lessens the risk of counterfeit parts being used if the original supplier no longer exists. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My in-depth conversation today, titled Keeping the Best of the Best, Retaining a Talented Federal Workforce. My guest in studio, Dr. Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, has been with me from the beginning of the show, and I'm happy to welcome to the studio former OPM Director Linda Springer, now with Ernst & Young. Linda, nice to see you again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You look rested and ready after vacation, as we were talking about during the break. How was the Jersey Shore this year?
Great. Very hot.
Good. Yeah, no kidding. I was in Rehoboth a couple of weeks ago, and it was... We were dying from the heat down there, and then I looked online and found out it was 10 degrees hotter here than it was when we were down there. So glad that you're back and up to speed and ready to go to talk about this issue. Something that you mentioned during the break and that Ron and I talked about before is the concept of keeping people is really tied in so heavily with the recruitment element of it. I mentioned to Ron, we talk on this station and people talk in government about recruiting the next generation of people, and it doesn't seem like as much attention is paid to the retention element of it. But from what Ron's talking about and from what we mentioned, what you discussed a little bit during the break, they're so tied together that it's hard to do one without the other.
I think that is right. The if you bring someone on the right way and nurture them in those early months and really years, as Ron mentioned earlier, then that sets the stage for a strong retention experience.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about before the break, the intangibles versus the tangibles. The tangibles are pretty obvious. The benefit package, the TSP, how much you get paid, and so on. Ron, you mentioned the manager-employee relationship as one of the intangibles, and we talked a little bit about the you leave a boss, not a job concept. What are some of the other intangibles that really make an impression on people that maybe a manager doesn't think about day to day as far as creating an environment where his people or her people want to stay?
Well, certainly this exists at various levels, but I do think the culture of the organization, and you can define organization as agency, command or bureau, installation, right down to the unit level.
Mm-hmm.
But let's keep it at the, at, you know, sort of at 100,000 feet because I do think the lowercase culture, individual managers can affect that. That's within their power.
Mm-hmm.
But the larger cultural context, what sort of values does the agency promote and reinforce and reward? Is it open? Do they encourage continuous learning? Those are all intangibles that I think also contribute to the retention decision.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the worst possible circumstance is espousing those values but then not practicing them.
Yeah.
I think employees are willing to say, look, I work in an agency that's got a pretty compelling mission. The operating tempo is pretty brutal. I understand that there may not be time to do certain things. It's all about the mission. They're willing to accept that. I think the inconsistency of saying we do and then not doing it.
Yeah.
That's problematic. And I do think, though, that the right kind of culture, the right kind of value system reinforced in the agency's reward systems can also contribute a great deal to retention.
What's OPM's role, Linda, in helping the agencies institute that culture or where it's instituted, grow it, make it more, I guess, weave it into the fabric of the agency so that the employees understand that it's really a high priority?
I think there are a couple of ways that OPM takes leadership in those and is doing so today. One is by setting an example in how the agency itself, it manages its own people and the type of culture and environment it sets. I think it, secondly, is influential through the Chico Council and working to set out some examples and some surface the types of characteristics of an effective culture. I think OPM also candidly can bring in people from outside of the government community itself that have been successful and bring that, be a source of other views and other approaches too.
Mm-hmm. I want to step back and Ron, talk about your 100,000 foot level, but also maybe the 100 foot level, and go at it maybe from an employee's perspective. When we come back from the break, my guests in studio today, Linda Springer, former OPM director, now with Ernst & Young, and Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, former chief human capital officer in the intelligence community, among others. We'll continue our conversation in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
My name is Haley Wong. My worst fears came when they told me that I had dengue fever.
Dengue fever ravages 50 million people in the developing world each year. There is no cure.
You literally feel the pain right in your bones. My fever was always roller coastering. I don't wish it even on my worst enemy.
Diseases like dengue fever are often neglected because they're confined to the developing world.
I stayed in the hospital for nearly a month just to get my body back to normal again. I just felt like I was just dead.
Over 100 Novartis researchers are working on neglected diseases at their nonprofit research center in Singapore. They're getting closer to a cure for dengue fever.
If there was a cure for dengue fever, people would be very relieved.
Novartis, think what's possible.
Have you delayed putting together an estate plan? Your retirement savings, insurance policies, and real estate are all part of your assets. If you or your partner should ever become incapacitated, who will handle the financial or medical decisions? And how do you want those assets distributed? Hi, I'm Wayne Zell of Zell Law and host of Blueprint for Wealth Saturdays at 10 a.m. Find out how you can better secure your future this Saturday or call me at Zell Law at 571-203-9355. Or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck.
Steve Kemp been selected to lead GSA's Federal Acquisition Service.
It's reaching out first to our employees and making sure that they're on board and getting the information from them on how we can do a better job. Then reaching out to the customer so that they understand how we're going to help them. And then lastly, our stakeholders. FAS hasn't been doing as good a job as it needs to in terms of being the one that tells its story by itself rather than other people tell the story for us.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/DorabeckInsider.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My in-depth conversation today titled, Keeping the Best of the Best, Retaining a Talented Federal Workforce. My guests in studio, Dr. Ron Sanders of Booz Allen and Linda Springer of Ernst & Young. And later in hour number two, we'll be joined by Angela Bailey of the Office of Personnel Management to talk about what's going on in retention at OPM right now and for the future. I want to approach, Ron, what you were saying about the 100,000-foot level and kind of combine that with the 100-foot level and throw a scenario out there. We have somebody who's an employee at an agency. We'll just call him Francis for the sake of argument. And
he must be disgruntled and disenchanted. Oh,
well, he likes
hypothetically,
but he likes working for the agency where he is. He buys into the culture that you were talking about, Ron. He buys into the mission of the agency, but is not tremendously happy where he is at the moment. Maybe he doesn't have a great relationship with his boss, or maybe the work that he's doing for the moment is not what he would like to be doing. What are some warning signs or what are some flares that people could see, both his boss and a couple levels up in the organization, to say, here's somebody that we really like what they're doing, but we'd really rather have them doing something else for us than something for somebody outside of our organization?
Well, the flares, I think that's a great word. One of the things that I think has worked best, and a number of agencies have gone this route, is to really take something like the Employee Viewpoint Survey and embed it in the way it, the agency does business, literally providing first-line managers and second-level supervisors with survey results.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, those survey results are being viewed by higher-level managers as well. So while, you know, an agency's overall scores may look pretty good, it can be a wonderful tool for identifying pockets of either high performance or disengagement, mm-hmm. where employees aren't being treated fairly. Frankly, when I was at the Internal Revenue Service, we did employee satisfaction surveys down to the first level supervisor. We knew results six ways from Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our intelligence agencies have done the same thing. And again, it's not intended to be a gotcha for the manager.
Right.
At least in the first and second resort, it's developmental. But those provide wonderful barometers. And generally, employees have some patience. They're not going to react immediately, but you can discern warning signs from survey results and other indicators like attrition, grievance rates, and the like to tell you maybe we ought to focus down here and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Linda, Ron mentioned the idea of being able to look at this data and see where high performance is as opposed to low performance. Obviously, whenever you see something that looks like it's a low performance center, you want to fix it. A lot of time and resources go to doing that. Do you think we do enough, though, at looking at the areas of high performance where people are really, really, really happy and saying, here are some best practices that we can do and implement them more, do the stuff that works a lot more than we're doing it?
It's the other side of the same coin.
Yeah.
And you do need to be doing that. And I think in addition to just gathering information, I think there are opportunities for us to have rotational type opportunities for people to move from one of those areas to the other. It could go either way, both ways. I also think it's important that employees feel that they have opportunities beyond just the once a year survey to have access and interaction with others besides a direct supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's someone at the highest level of the agency, the traditional walking around, getting off the executive suite, things like brown bag lunches, people who candidly are in remote locations, other parts of the country. Most of the agencies have offices outside of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that there's an opportunity for FaceTime. It could be an anonymous email. You know, we had something called My Ideas where people could send something in. And in some cases, they did lead to an opportunity for them to share an observation about how they felt about their particular position. And,
mm-hmm.
So I think that an ongoing set of vehicles for expression and communication will help those things to not fester but be able to be surfaced.
You did brown bags at OPM, I know, and I wonder if they turned out to be I can't think of a better term, so I'm going to say productive. Obviously, they were. You wouldn't have kept doing them. But there is the element of somebody maybe not feeling they can be as candid as they'd like to be because, hey, this is the director, and she's really my ultimate boss and can make my life miserable if she chose to.
And I've worked for Linda Springer, and I tell you, she can be scary. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Of course.
Ron, I've heard the same about Ron, but actually, people were very candid. And it was very helpful mm-hmm. to have that too. And they, how was a new project going to affect them? Or, you know, they were feeling maybe frustrated about something that, you know, having more information was helpful. Or there were other times where people would stay behind and say, I want to talk to you privately a little bit. But I think the point you're making is there's a need for a vehicle where people can be candid.
Mm-hmm.
There are other ways to do that, and we had that, for example, with the My Ideas email that came right to a dedicated box there. And so I think – but there – it's a variety of ways, and different things work better for – and there are ways that are unique to special situations. But I think the important thing is that people feel that there's – an embracement of them, that they're valued and that they should feel comfortable expressing themselves beyond just the happy situation where they're able to do that with their direct supervisor.
Mike, Francis, let me just underscore what Linda said.
Please.
I do think whatever the mechanism or mechanisms, plural, the agency needs to go about it deliberately. what are the early warning mechanisms we're going to put in place? So it's not just the once a year snapshot of the survey, mm-hmm. but other metrics that we can track, some tangible, some not, so that we know as soon as we can whether there's an issue with a particular manager or a particular unit, what have you. And I'll go back to something we talked about now about half an hour, 40 minutes ago. The fact is, retention today is phenomenal. It's down, attrition is like 1 or 2%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a function of the external economy. But we know that'll change. These things are cyclical. So here again, agencies have the opportunity to put these early warning mechanisms in place, not for today or tomorrow or next month or maybe even next year, but particularly for mission-critical occupations. As the labor market becomes more competitive, as it gets tighter, as people that, Linda's famous quote, the retirement tsunami, mm-hmm. it's only been delayed. We know it's still out there.
Yeah.
So that way the early warning signs, the mechanisms are in place, the radar screens are up, and agencies are in a position to deal with retention in very tailored, targeted ways when necessary.
Well, I mentioned during one of the commercial breaks that there is a new study about pay in the federal government or in governments in general. It seems like about every 5 minutes or so. And I want to talk about, when we come back, your views, both of you, on where that ranks. Ron, we've talked a lot about the intangibles. That's very tangible. And I want to have a little bit of our conversation devoted to the idea of pay and where it ranks as far as keeping the best people when our in-depth conversation, keeping the best of the best, retaining a talented federal workforce continues with Ron Sanders and Linda Springer. We'll be back in a moment.
From this week on Agency of the Month, brought to you by Panasonic Solutions Company.
They're called Tactical Diversion Squads, an army of sorts working for the Drug Enforcement Administration to stop criminals. Special Agent Gary Boggs.
These tactical diversion squads are going to be based across the United States, sort of a force multiplier. And right now we have around 30 or so deployed across the United States, and then hope to develop several more of these squads over the next couple of years and deploy them to strategic locations across the United States.
I'm Ruben Gomez.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Now's a great time to purchase the most reliable mobile computer in the industry. Make your budget dollars count with Panasonic ToughBook rugged and reliable mobile computers. Computers that won't let you down. Built with extreme quality control in Panasonic's factory, ToughBook computers consistently achieve industry-leading uptime. Simply put, they keep working. Panasonic ToughBook computers meet all your needs wherever your job takes you. Call 1-877-52-RUGGED for details.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Don Adcock is the new director of the Army's Information Technology Agency. He wants to be on the cutting edge when it comes to technology.
I'm looking to find a single entity within the agency that's sole charter and mission in life will be innovation. So over the next 6 to 12 months, I'll be looking to create an innovation entity here in ITA that helps us understand innovation, how to bring it into the agency, and what do we do with it once we have it here.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Well, Facebook has been having somewhat of a problem They're just sharing your data with everybody. Mm-hmm. Deactivation is not the same as deletion.
The information is still out there.
And what they try to do is they try to urge you to deactivate, and they try to keep you away from that nasty deletion page. You see, deactivation simply turns off your account, but does not remove the data. The idea behind deactivation is that someday you'll be back.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My in-depth conversation today called Keeping the Best of the Best, Retaining a Talented Federal Workforce. My guests are Linda Springer, former OPM director now with Ernst & Young, and Ron Sanders, former chief human capital officer in the at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, also time with the IRS and at DOD, and now with Booz Allen. And about 40 minutes from now, we'll be joined by Angela Bailey, Deputy Associate Director at the Office of Personnel Management. She'll join us to talk about what OPM is doing today and in the future when it comes to retention. We talked about pay before as one of the big tangibles that is on people's minds. But as I said, there's about 80 million surveys. If you Google federal pay survey, you probably get a kajillion hits on that. There are a lot of these surveys about what people in the federal government make compared to the private sector, and they can be sliced and diced a million different ways. When it boils right down to it, though, both anecdotally and data that you're both familiar with, how important is the pay, you know, down to the dollar or 10,000 or whatever, compared to some of the things that we've talked about, like culture and buying into the mission of the agency? Linda, why don't you go first?
Well, I think it's a factor that's considered. I don't think there's any question about that. And when we say pay, we're talking comprehensively, including benefits. Mm-hmm. And benefits particularly, I think, in some ways and for some segments, even more so than the base pay, is a point of sensitivity. And certainly the federal government has been generous in that area. So I think it's a discriminator. There are people who will make a decision with that certainly in mind. But I don't think it's the only factor, and I think the surveys have shown that. I think it would be a mistake to say that people are staying because that's the dominant factor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people feel very strongly about what they do. In other economic environments where there are more choices in the private sector, people still stay.
Mm-hmm.
And retention certainly is lower now, but it's never astronomically high. And it's not just because of pay. Many of these people would have choices. You look at some of the doctors or some of the other professionals, they feel very passionately about public service. So I don't think that is the only factor, and in many cases, I don't believe it's the dominant factor, but mm-hmm. it is a factor.
Uh-huh. Ron, what's your experience when it comes to pay?
Similar to Linda's, I agree with everything she said,
You're trying to get her to hire you again,
yeah.
Or what?
Yeah, don't no. I think it falls sort of, if you pick the 10 things that people look for in jobs, mm-hmm. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. I think the intangibles tend to come out on top. I do think pay is important when there are extreme disparities between the labor market and what the federal government is paying. So, at the margins, you mentioned doctors, but doctors, in many cases, there are special salary rates to deal with that disparity. So we close the gap to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that in the mid and late 90s with IT professionals, and we required special salary rates, something that we did at OPM under Linda. So I think at the margins where the disparities are extreme, pay can be important. But I do think it comes down to an individual employee's sense of fairness. Am I being treated fairly? And I think Linda's spot on. The idea that it's and this is what makes John Berry's job so hard, and trying to do an apples-to-apples comparison, I'm not sure that's possible because of the benefits that are involved. Those have to be taken into account, and in part because I think many people come to government, maybe most people come to government, because of the intangible rewards of public service.
Mm-hmm.
You can't quantify that. So I'm not sure how productive it is to have these studies that say federal employees are overpaid. I think, it just takes attention away from the debate, from the discussion that we've been having here today.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get and keep good people?
Yeah.
And in many cases, it comes down to individual strategies tailored to individual employees in individual organizations.
We only have a few minutes left in this hour, and Ron, we're going to have to let you go, and I appreciate the time that you've taken to be here. I would like to hear your thoughts, and then Linda will get into your thoughts on this subject after the top of the hour, about the generational differences. We talked briefly in one of the commercial breaks about the idea that there's seems to be a perception that the government's doing, has been doing business the way it's doing it now for the past X number of years. And this younger generation of people coming in is trying to turn everything on its ear, when in fact, we do things differently than our parents did, and our parents did things differently than our grandparents did, and on. This is not new, is it?
No. I know that I used to get weird looks when I was a brand new federal employee, essentially dealing with managers and executives who had been through the Depression and World War II, and I had not. I was sort of the Vietnam generation. So I think every new generation is looked at a bit askance. I think in the federal government it may be a bit more acute because for many agencies that were downsized or downsizing during the 90s, they have literally a trough in their demographic profile. We sort of skipped a generation in many agencies. So I think that compounds it. But I will argue that today's supervisor, manager, leader is confronting a multi-environment. It is multi-generational, to be sure. It is multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
It is multi-agency. It is just multi-dimensional. And I think the days where a manager and his or her employees could say, this is our job, put the blinders on, just worry about getting that done, don't worry about anything else, those are long gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this multi-environment has made leading and managing in the federal government more challenging, yet it becomes even more important in the retention equation that we've been talking about.
I'm really grateful for your time, Ron. It's great to see you again. I'm glad you're doing well at Booz Allen, and I'm glad they're taking good care of you, and it's great to have you in studio.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
My guest leaving us now, Dr. Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, former Chief Human Capital Officer in the intelligence community. Linda Springer is here. You're going to stick around for a little while, Linda, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about the generational challenges that managers are having in government and how to kind of put a bridge over that trough that Ron talked about. My guests on Federal News Radio 1500 AM will be back after the top of the hour, and later on in hour number two of the program, Angela Bailey of the Office of Personnel Management joining us to talk about retention initiatives in place and coming online at OPM. Back for hour number two in just a moment.